Hey guys, it's Justin here. This episode is the dad podcast that I did with Bill Glass, who was a guest on Second Funniest Podcast on episode 50. So this is going to be a weekly podcast that we'll do where we talk about dad stuff, all that stuff. If you like it or don't like it, please send us some feedback. podcast@justincomedy.com. You're going to be hearing the episodes on this feed for the first month, and then after that it'll have its own feed that you can subscribe to. Also, some Second Funniest Podcast news. Second Funniest Podcast is going to be coming out on Fridays now, so look for that to come out on Friday or in the middle of the night, Thursday night, and all that jazz. So that'll be coming out later on this week. Thanks for listening. Remember, podcast@justincomedy.com, 408-228-4911. Thanks. Here we are, episode one, first one, going now, live.
Dipping our toes in.
Dipping it, just trying it out.
We don't dip, we dive.
We dive right in. We don't mess around. We're not messing around. We don't even have a title for this. That's how new this is.
Yeah.
This is exactly how, for you don't know, Bill, but most of the listeners that are going to be listening to this now are people who already listened to the Second Funniest Podcast, otherwise known as the JK Show. This is how I do things. I just go.
Yes,
I just do it,
and I'm like, should.
We'll figure it out as we go
airbags
along.
Airbags will deploy if we need them.
Yeah, so this is Bill Glass is here with Justin Worsham. We're doing a podcast for dads, you know, just about being a dad. We're both kind of stay-at-home dads. I think that's a fair description.
And we both agree that a lot of things cater to the moms out there.
Oh, man.
Let's help the dads out.
Too many.
Send up a flare.
Because I don't know if you ever went through this, but I read the What to Expect When You're Expecting chapter for the father.
Yeah.
And 99.9% of that chapter was, when can I hump my wife again? What ways can I hump her?
Yeah.
How should I hump her?
That's all we're thinking about is getting laid.
Exactly.
After the watermelon pops out of the vagina. We just saw the gabagoo in the delivery room.
Yeah.
And we're all thinking, good, when can I get laid?
Yeah. Can I do that again?
Thanks for that chapter, What to Expect When You're Expecting.
Forget about the lack of sleep for the next month or whatever that you have.
And then the other chapters, if I recall correctly, or the other advice to dads was how to care for the mom.
Yeah.
How to care for your wife.
Yeah.
What you can do as a husband for your wife.
Because as a father, you're completely uninvolved in the process.
No, we do nothing.
You know, and I feel like maybe it's this book is the reason why we have so many strippers in the world. That maybe if we had more dads that were involved and knew how to be, instead of trying to bone mom again to make more siblings to create more rejection for this other one, right?
Yes.
These big Mormon families, they crank them out like they're Pez, and then somebody gets sent away to be a stripper.
Where's Jimmy Ray? Somebody check the upstairs closet. The gate's open. I don't know why I went Southern for this part.
Because it's a Southern thing. It's a Southern thing to do. Because my father talked about it. My father only had kids so that he could have somebody to do the things he didn't like to do.
Yes.
That's a very Southern mentality.
Well, for me, it's even deeper because my sister and I are adopted. So my dad went out and bought labor. My mom and dad went out and paid for labor.
You were outsourced.
I was outsourced. Adoption in the 70s, as far as I was concerned. My dad was looking for a lawnmower.
It's a loophole for slavery.
That's it. We can't have kids. Let's go get one, honey.
I'm not mowing this lawn.
My mom was thinking, oh, joy, and she was meant to be a mother.
Yeah.
It was good for her. My dad was thinking, this lawn's going to be, sweet ass maintained if I have anything to do about it.
This is a good way to start, too, I think, because my dad, we've talked about my dad, he's been on the other podcast, but my dad is the dad who, you had to have a job, like, from the time you were 4 years old. He's like, if you want something, get a job, and you can't pay to do I can't pay you to do anything around the house because I do that stuff for free. So you have to find something else to do. And I'm sure he had some big master plan about that. But I feel like being a father has changed significantly just between the generation of yours and my dad.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now you and I being dads.
My dad was... I grew up in the suburbs. He was an electrician. We were middle class. It was a nice, but my dad still came from that era
Yeah.
where it was like, I don't want to hear from your mother. If you make your mother mad, I have to listen to your mother. Shit rolls downhill. I think I was 8, and I got the first shit rolls downhill, and you're at the bottom speed. And I was like, wow, all right, here we go, you know? And my dad was a very sweet man, but he's old school.
Yeah,
Came home from work, and it was 2 old styles, yeah. And then you could talk to him.
Isn't that funny, though, that today, like, we have to, because I feel like my dad said some I made a joke about it. My dad used to call me retarded because I didn't know what a 7/16-inch socket with a quarter-inch drive was when I was 6 years old. Like, you were stupid and retarded and useless. And it's like now, whenever I tell people that in public, I always have to make some kind of comment of saying he loved me, like I felt loved, everything's okay, yes. We're all okay, yes. You know what I mean? And but before that, but was just the way it is.
Just stay away from the garage,
yeah.
Don't go help daddy work on the car.
I never
my
did.
Mom would be like, you want to go help your dad? And I was like, no. Exactly. Even at the age of 6, I could read body language. He doesn't want me anywhere near the 7/16 inch,
yeah.
And he doesn't want me anywhere near the garage because he's having a half a pack of Winston's, and he's having an old style.
That's his man cave time.
It's man cave time. He's going to fix the garage door
for the
18th time, no matter what happens. Don't go out there. I knew.
So my dad insisted that I help, though. Like, that was the, if I stayed.
I think I got invited to help once.
Yeah.
Look, as I said, I'm adopted. I didn't get to work with my hands, Gene.
I just
didn't. So I think dad invited me out once or twice, if I remember. And then it was like, okay. I'm just going to, you know, it was like inviting my mom out to help.
Yeah.
We're just not going
to
do that.
Well, because I don't even think it has to, I think it has to do with that generation, because I have the genetics thing. I like to fix things. I like technical things. I just don't like being called retarded. So that was what created the work with dad conflict that I had. You know what I mean? Of like,
well, see, like now, you know, I think we're both in, like, I'm doing dishes. I'm doing laundry. My dad hasn't done a load of laundry in 25 years.
My father, I've talked about this, too, I think, on the other shows, that my dad, even when my mom isn't around, like, he will just get up and leave his plate on the table. And I'm like, you are a grown-ass man.
Right.
You can walk it to the sink, maybe.
Yeah.
And what was funny is that because my parents are divorced, so when my real mom was around, my dad did all the cooking because my mom didn't do that. But when my stepmom came around, like, he hit it out of the park. He hit the trifecta with her. She worked and made good money. She cleaned the house and she cooked. Like, he was like, great. This is a misogynist, like, dream come true. So then he has this son of me where it's like, I have all of the expectation of that. Like, I want Natalie to do the laundry, to cook, and know how to do that. And then I want it to be a big deal when I do it. That's what I want it to be like. Look at now, who's husband of the year? Because I did the whites, just so we know.
See, that's like my wife will listen to this and go, you idiot. You are not super husband or super dad. Because I feel like, hey, I did a load of whites. I contributed, which is more than our fathers did.
Exactly.
You know? The dishes, I wiped off the counter, and my wife was like, shut up. Shut your mouth.
See, that's unfair.
I whirl around and I'm like, wait a minute. I am home.
Kim, if you are listening to this right now, I'm here to back up your husband in that you're using the wrong litmus test, Kim.
Right.
I don't know if she had a brother at all or if she grew up
she
with all...
She did have a brother.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what did he do? Do you know?
I don't even know.
Yeah, because here's... If you grow... maybe the real question is your father-in-law. Like, we have to figure out what did he do around the house.
I'm going to assume nothing.
Nothing, right?
He didn't do anything.
So then, Kim, use that litmus test.
Right.
And now we're doing a show for your wife.
Yeah, right. But I think the point was, I think the generational shift happened when the young ladies that grew up with us looked around and saw our dads not doing anything.
Yeah, and they're like, well,
and
we're going to change
this.
Yeah,
my ass.
Yeah, thanks a lot, dads.
Yeah, way to go, dad and grandpas. Way to go.
Way to not hold on to that.
Yeah, way to suck it.
Yeah, because I also have another, well, this is getting more into like the marriage aspect, but I also have a theory about that. Not that I'm saying that this is your wife. Or my wife, you know, we have to make sure we'll put that disclaimer out.
Disclaimer, not necessarily our wife.
No, this could be most women, is what I might say. For your wife, I'm saying this is Justin Worsham talking. This is not Bill Glass. So we'll do the little DVD commentary disclaimer.
Thank you.
But that I feel like if men would stop marrying bitchy women, that then they couldn't procreate. You know what I mean? Right. So if you would just stop marrying a woman that's going to, like, nag all over you and jump up your ass the whole time, then they can't make more of them.
Well, therein lies the rub of maybe this podcast, us talking about becoming dads.
Yeah.
Because if your wife is bitchy before she's pregnant and before you have a child.
Oh, yeah.
Forget, dude.
My wife.
Dude.
My wife was borderline perfect before we had a kid. Like, she was.
My wife was borderline insane the whole time. we've been married, and I thought, let's have a family.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll calm things down. Let's make it not about us. And maybe we'll find the joy and teamwork of marriage will bring us closer together. And if you hear that clicking in the background, folks, that's me playing Russian roulette as I tell this story.
Well, we just got to make sure she doesn't listen. That's the next step.
She might or she won't. It's 50-50. Either she's like, oh, yay for you, or she's going to be like, what'd you say about me? What is wrong with you? And then it just, you know.
So to the wives, we have to tell them that we decided to do a manly podcasting about, yes, like, candle making, yeah, or something like that. Nothing, and then they'll never care.
They'll never listen.
They're fine.
They'll
or maybe listen. It's all football. Does your wife like football?
No.
Okay, good. There we go. It's an all football.
It's all football.
This became a fantasy football podcast.
It's a man cast.
That's what you could tell your wife that you're listening to.
And right from Jump Street, as soon as we had Brady, it was, you know, we didn't go breastfeeding. So we were bottle fed.
Yeah. And, so that means you're involved.
Dude. Yeah. Sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
Hormonal.
Yeah.
And yet everybody's worried about the woman.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
I'm what flying about? On 3 hours of sleep.
Let's not also consider the fact that maybe men aren't genetically to do the things that we're asked to do now. Like,
right.
I notice, and maybe you are different from me in this, is that I had a fight because we did breastfeeding. So when my wife went back to work, because I'm a loser comedian who gets to stay at home when he's not working, she goes to work. I have to feed her all day, but she can't come home for lunch to pump, right? Then it's like there's no food for me. And I'm also in a world that I feel like I'm genetically ill-prepared. Like, I'm not mean-spirited, you know what I mean? I grew up being called a retarded, so I'm compensating by loving and kissing the child every 5 seconds, yes, to make him borderline homosexual, I'm sure, in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
So gays, get more ready because your numbers are about to increase as long as I'm procreating, all right? Because I'm going to love a boy like no man has ever loved a boy.
Sensitive men are coming. Yeah. The next generation of sensitive men are coming.
And if he works out to be straight, you're welcome, ladies. You're welcome because he will be cleaning and cooking, yes, up a storm.
He will be doing laundry.
He will macrame anything for you. Oh, this boy is going to be so
My
good.
My son will be a bedazzler like you have never seen.
And thank God that it'll be Butch then, hopefully. But anyway, my point was is that so I would just lose my mind because I'm like, because my wife did. She, like everybody says, I'm like, I was really worried. We did the dog thing where we practiced on having a dog. And my wife, I'm pretty short fused, but my wife, when the dog would get her angry, it would turn instantly to get the fuck out of my face. Like there was no in between, you know, time. Yeah. And sure enough, as soon as the baby came, she had the maternal instinct. Everything was going great and stuff like that. But when she left and I'm home by myself, I would lose it. Like I had a moment with my son when he's like 3 months old. And this is even before Natalie went back to work and I had to set him down because he wouldn't stop crying.
Yes.
And I had to go, I don't know what the fuck you want.
Yes.
I yelled at him.
These are the most wonderful days of your life. And it's puppies and rainbows and farts smell like roses. And wasn't that a cute diaper?
Oh,
no.
Man. Yeah.
No, man.
No.
I understand. I'm like PSAs to tell parents to set their child in a crib.
Yeah.
Be safe. I'm like, why are you spending money on that PSA? Now I understand, my friends.
Yeah.
Now I understand.
Now you get it.
Sometimes you just have to set the child down in their crib.
Yeah.
They're safe there. And my mother-in-law had a great point. I've never heard of a child crying himself to death.
Yeah. Never happened.
Go set him in the crib. Walk away. Gather yourself.
Yep.
Understand that they have no idea what's going on.
And maybe this is wrong because my approach to the crying thing is if I do hit that point, it's like I always imagine I'm breaking a horse in my head. Like I honestly go, you're wasting energy so that when you get tired again and I can break through this wall that you've built of sadness and depression and heavy breathing, now I can talk to you. And even though he's like 15 months old, so there's no talking.
That's the other thing is I expected. So for the record, I should disclose. Brady, 4.5.
Yeah.
Griffin, 2.5.
Good.
I also come from a different filter for you. We've discussed this before we came in there. Our son Cooper, my wife and I lost our son Cooper in 2001. So I don't need to delve into that other than I come from the bubble wrap overprotective side. You're more, and I think I can say this.
Yeah.
Oh, Jacob's by a socket with a fork.
Yeah.
He'll bounce back.
He'll bounce back.
Right.
That's exactly.
So we come from two different.
That's exactly it.
My point being also on that note was I expected. When he hit a certain age, like I can have a discussion with him. Like you said, he's 15 months old, and I'm like, what do you want? Will you just tell me what you want? Shut up with that. What do you want for lunch?
That's what I could do.
And I swear to God, I thought Kim went home for 5 days or something. And I think we just had Brady at this point. 5 days alone. I'm like, I can do this. And I can be an Army Ranger too.
Yeah.
I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So, and like you said, the maternal instinct, women are like, oh, that's so sexist. Shut up.
Yeah.
You have it.
You have
it. You know what to put in the bag.
It's biological.
You know what to put in the bag.
Yeah.
You know to pack 3 diapers and an extra set of clothes before you're in a car in the middle of traffic and you have no tools. I've been there, man.
Yeah.
A 405 with a car seat that is about to burst into flames from the high-pitched squeaks of my son.
Yeah.
And I want to just knock on somebody's car next to me.
Yes.
Do you have any juice or milk?
Something.
Do you happen to have a size 3 diaper in your trunk?
Jesus Christ, it takes a village. Someone, please.
Please, we are all doing 20 miles an hour on the 405. Somebody parachute into my car.
You're desperately trying to find a minivan in Gridiron.
There's a town and country. Honey, there's a town and country van about 0.4 miles ahead of me. Just give me one second.
Oh, gosh. And that's because that's the other thing. Like, I think that's kind of like what we're hitting on is that whole idea of, like, it's sexist to say that women are better.
No, they are better.
Why? When did it become
that? I think it's a tip of the cap. Why is it detrimental to say, you know what, you're very good at this?
I don't understand when it became uncouth for women to be able to be good at cooking a meal, or when it good at doing laundry and just taking care of a house, because I've done it and it's not fun.
No,
it's not. And I'm not saying that you have to do it because it's not fun. I'm saying that there are women out there that they genuinely enjoy it. And I think it's unfair that as a society, we look at them and say, you're less
there. And there was, that's my mom.
Yeah.
Good at it.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it.
My mom does it
very still to this day.
Yeah.
She's ironing and doing stuff.
Yeah.
And I wish she would have got out more. But anyway, so my point being, I come from a place of tip of the cap to the lady. I'll tell you right now, I can be all bravado and bitch about my wife, but this place would fall apart without my wife.
Oh,
my
yeah.
wife is the organizational and the mental king of what needs to have happen. And if I were out in the world on my own right now, I would be stumbling down an on-ramp begging for change like, hey, sort of funny guy, needs food. You know, help me out.
Very funny guy. Be fair, very funny guy. And in my situation, it wasn't until, because I've been with my wife for 12 years and we're high school sweethearts. And in the beginning, I was the pillar. Since going to therapy, I may have unhashed that maybe that wasn't true. That might have been a little delusion.
We were all the pillar in our own mind.
Exactly.
Like, we're high school sweethearts, too.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, off and on high school sweethearts.
Oh, that's great.
So we've known each other since we were 16.
Oh.
So there's a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
That seems awesome, but it sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Everybody, I talk about this in my stand-up, that everybody, when they say, like, I go, I married my high school sweetheart, they always go, oh, and they think that it's great. And again, here's the thing. I think we both agree on this point, is that just because we complain about it doesn't mean we hate these people. You know what
I mean? Well,
I hate them.
Sometimes.
I agree.
I think it's a part-time.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah, because here's the thing. I hate my wife when she's in front of my face, and then the minute I leave, I miss her. That's the honest to God's truth.
Sure.
It makes no sense.
I need to travel or go on the road to
develop that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Once she goes, because you do. I go away for about a first day. I'm like, I could care less. But day two, as soon as that, I'm like, oh, I wish she was here. We could go see a movie.
I might make day three.
Day three. And then
it's like, oh. And even the kids, too. We talk about.
But you got a lot more years in this than I have. But from 16.
Well, sure.
I mean, well, you're not that much older than I am,
no,
right?
Well, I'm 38. So,
yeah. So, yeah. So you've got 8 more years in the hopper than I do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, I just hate, you know, that the dishes can end up about that girl I hit on in high school, you know, really. Like, I didn't load the fucking dishwasher, and all of a sudden, Katie Johansson, who doesn't exist, you know, now I said Katie Johansson, my wife's going to listen to this and go, who the fuck is Katie Johansson? She doesn't exist. Made up name, honey. Never existed.
And so you know Kim. He said that pretty quick. That doesn't exist, which is funny because that means Kim has programmed you that you have to acknowledge just made up a name.
Look, my balls are in a jar in a Thai minefield, man. My balls, you say I've got 8 years more in this than you?
Yeah.
My balls have been in a jar atrophying and getting dusty.
How often do you get to visit them, dude?
I don't.
You don't ever.
We iChat on occasion now with new technology. My balls will text.
It's a lot easier.
You know, at least they got put in a Crown Royal bag, in a jar, and then placed deep in a minefield under a Thai rice paddy.
She like, why does she like Thailand? Why does she keep
them
there?
It's far away.
Far away.
It's hard
to get to. Southwest doesn't go there.
Asian land.
Yeah.
Exotic. Your balls are in an exotic land. Having the rules
are different. Yeah, the rules are different there too. So you could probably just bury balls anywhere. You don't have to have a safety deposit box like you would here in California or something.
No. And I don't know. Were you the dad that felt like you had to buy all the tools, all the stuff, and all these guides about buying stuff?
I bought. I had two books that I got. I got Baby Wise, and then Natalie got What to Expect When You're Expecting and What to Expect in the First Year. I was a big fan of Baby Wise because it supported this whole like behavior psychology type aspect. So I was like rewarding good behavior and ignoring negative behavior. Like I was like, oh, this is good. And I had a weird moment with the Baby Wise because it teaches you how to properly breastfeed. And sure. We knew we were going to breastfeed. Like you talked about, you went for formula, and everybody always says, oh, it's good if you could breastfeed. It's so much better for the baby, blah, blah, blah. And I'll be honest, it had nothing to do with that hippie crap for me. It was free. I feed one, I feed two. Like, yes. That's simple as that. Killing two birds with one stone.
Amen, brother.
That was the end of it, right? Natalie, as soon as she showed me what a jar of formula costs, I'm like, won't be doing that. So sorry.
The booby machine works for me.
Yeah. I don't know if you got to churn them, whatever you got to do. I'll work them for you.
You need
if
to hook up to a shaker? How does that work?
So because of that, I felt like I need to prepare myself. I need to educate myself. So what I'm expecting my wife to do, because I am misogynistic in that sense where it's like if she came to me and said, this is painful, what happened? Are you hearing something?
I don't know if the cable guy rang the doorbell or not.
Oh, you want to go check? We can hit pause.
Yeah, hit pause.
Okay.
Cable guy here.
All right. Cable guy has come. He's
gone.
So we were in the middle of talking about how I educated myself on breastfeeding through Baby Wise.
Sure.
And the reason that I started down this story is you were talking about getting tools together and all that stuff. I think I feel like I'm rehashing more for us. The people have already heard this. They're like, we get it. Keep moving.
Move.
So anyway, I had a conversation with my wife through because I'd read through Baby Wise how to properly latch and breastfeed a baby, where I was teaching her how to breastfeed. So, like, those were the kind of tools that I had to go out and get. She got the What to Expect When You're Expecting, which was more nice because it was just informational, general. It wasn't specific to, like, a particular philosophy or anything like that.
And for the record, I tried to show my wife how the baby would breastfeed, and I got kicked in the ding-ding. And thus began the sexless part of my marriage. But go on.
Now, you guys did bottles, so there was right. did she ever have to, like, pump or anything? Or she just let it sit in there and then it just went away?
Well, they wrapped up the boobies to dry them up.
Oh, okay.
Did the tight wrap, and I guess that kind of stopped.
Constricts it and makes it
from developing and doing it.
See, my wife, she was so ignorant to how to do it that she would pump them completely dry, which I guess releases a hormone to make more.
Oh.
So she had at one point – oh, hold on. My cell phone is too close to us now. She at one point had a clogged duct or whatever.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so this is another thing with being glad that we're men and we don't have to go through. Cause
look,
she said
I love your wife, but you said clogged duct, and I went, bitch alert, bitch alert.
she was a champion because what she did, she said, it feels like there's somebody stabbing me with a knife every time I feed this kid in the chest. Like it's just digging a knife in there. And so I go, well, isn't there something that we can do? She said, it's a warm compress, and he just has to feed through it to clear it out.
No, I need to stop you right there.
Yeah.
Thus becomes one of the points of this podcast.
Yes.
And this is where the husband steps up.
Yeah.
This is part of the child-rearing process.
Oh, I see where you're going.
A clogged nipple duct.
You got to clear that out.
Does anyone tell you that you've got to deal with the hormonal raging woman who's got a boob that feels like, and I'm quoting here, she's being stabbed with a knife.
They don't teach you that in health class.
They know.
No.
It's sperm, egg, uterus, Yahtzee.
All of the clinical.
Nobody says you're going to deal with a raging hormonal beast.
Yes.
That may clog a nipple duct.
And why not also, because instead of separating the boys and the girls like they did when at least I was going to school, why not do it to where they tell the ladies too? They say, hey, ladies, just so you know, things are going to get crazy for you when you become with child. Yes. So just be prepared for it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And because, I mean, she's walking through the room now, but that might be a thing where I think that the women would have appreciated more of a heads up. I know that my wife would have liked to have known that sometimes ladies take a deuce when they're in the middle of the birthing thing. My yes. wife didn't know that.
Yes.
My mom is a respiratory therapist, so she gave her a heads up and said, oh, it's going to be horrible. This is one of the things
Look
you'll
out.
Do. And then my wife, again, paying it forward. See what happens when you prepare people. My wife is like, well, before I go with the epidural, I'm going to go try and make a boom boom so that I don't do it on the table. That's what I'm going to do for
that's,
you,
that's
she says to the RN.
That's preparation.
Exactly. She's ready to go.
What that does is that sets up the operating room for, or the birthing room.
Yeah.
Well, ours was C-section, so I say operating
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Room. It sets it up for a camaraderie.
Exactly.
When,
and we all know.
Everyone knows you're not going to drop a deucey.
Exactly.
And you, hey, we can be in this together then.
Because a nurse will tell you that the most annoying thing is a woman who can't handle it. Like, that's what
sure.
they say. Like, that's the roughest part. That's their bad part of their gig is that
sure.
you get a woman who comes in there who can't handle it. And then the secondary thing is a husband who gets woozy.
Sure.
So, like, they told me I had to sit down when I was shocked that the anesthesiologist let me stay in the room when they gave her the epidural because they had a guy who was watching it happen. This is kind of heavy for a comedy podcast, but he watched the injection, passed out, fainted, cracked his skull on the floor there in the delivery room, and died on the day that his child was born. Like, and so
I don't know where to go with that.
Exactly. There's nowhere.
Yeah. I don't know where to go.
There is nowhere to go with that. It's just like, and so to me, I guess what we were saying is that this idea of preparation, learning, because I know that when I was in high school, they made everything seem very simple. Like, there's this approach now that we have to parenting that it's just very, hey, you know, it's just going to hit you. Like, you're just going to all of a sudden know what to do.
No.
And I've seen it happen with women, but I have not seen it happen with a dude.
No.
I only feel like the only parenting thing that I had was I'm looking at my father and I'm saying, what did I like and what did I not like? And I'm going to do that. That's the only thing. There was no magical moment of, oh, the baby needs to eat more milk today. There's none of that. There's no, my elbow is tingling. He needs some fiber. He needs fiber.
Because Kim has come home and I'm like, he's doing this, this, and this. And she'll go, what time did he eat?
Yeah.
Did you try to feed him this?
Yeah.
You know, he had his cereal at 7:30. It's 11.
Yes.
What do you think is next? Fine. Shut up, smartass.
Exactly.
But I took you off the path.
No, that's the exact same path because I needed that book.
Natalie had a blocked duck.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
And I took tangential life.
That's okay. That's okay. So she had a blocked duck. So she had to just deal with it. She had to just make it happen and be okay with it and just force her way through it. And then eventually it just goes away. But there was nothing that could be done. And even through that, I was a supportive enough husband to go, no, we don't need formula. We don't need any of that stuff. That costs money.
No.
Come on, it's a couple.
Come on, one pipe's open.
Yeah. You alternate anyway.
Come on.
It's only three times a day you're in excruciating pain.
One pipe's open.
This is what you signed up for. Shouldn't have eaten that apple, shouldn't you? Huh? Somebody to be mad at, I think, now.
Yeah. And now we've gone back to the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Just that quickly, we're back at the beginning of time. And what I feel, see, you're in a situation where you have one.
Yeah.
So, and we were a little different because we lived in an apartment with
yes.
Brady. We coddled him, and every time he cried, we didn't want to wake up the neighbors. So we read the baby. We read the books, I think, all the books you mentioned. Griffin is just out of luck, man. He's just out of luck. If he cries, go check and see
We've
if
been
he's
there.
Safe.
Yeah, we got a house
go,
now.
Go check and see if he's safe.
If he's not swallowing a blade.
if he is not chewing on an electrical cord or somehow got his head wedged between the bars of the crib, the boy is fine. And I'm taking 2 Ambien, and I'll see you on Wednesday. But with Brady, he rolled over. You know, that's what I said.
Yeah.
I'm a bubble wrap dad. I got, you know, and all these scare tactics. What's the crib disease?
Yeah.
Which is horrible. But,
yeah.
You know, our pediatrician said, do not go on the internet.
Yeah.
You will lose your
yes.
freaking mind if you go
yes.
on the internet. And so nobody prepares you for
My father's theory, he says that, he goes, you want to have kids before you're 30. And I go, well, what about these parents that are, he goes, trust me, an ill-prepared parent, in his opinion, is better than an overly prepared parent in that if you know everything that could possibly go wrong with your child, you will spend 90% of their life just being fearful and trying to keep
sure.
them from getting any kind
sure.
of thing wrong with them or
sure.
anything like that. And so maybe this is curious because I've always wanted to know, because most of the people that I've talked to that are overly protective are parents that Because I've seen you with your kid. It's not. It's like I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, I know that you have the a reason and everything, but do you have in the back of your head where you feel like maybe they're going to be fearful? Because I've seen your kid. Your kid isn't fearful or afraid of anybody.
Griffin,
you know
what I mean? Griffin is not afraid.
Yeah.
But I think back to our discussion earlier. I think I made Brady the sensitive.
Oh, not, Brady maybe
well,
a little.
Yes, we were a little more protective. I was a little more protective of him because he also wasn't very coordinated.
Oh.
I wasn't a coordinated kid either. So I was worried about him getting bumped or whatever. And we've also had, they said the loss of Cooper was one in a million.
Yeah.
So when people say, well, it's one in a million, he's going to fall off that play set and kill himself. That doesn't make me feel any
I've
better.
I've been one in a million.
Yeah. So that's what I was talking about. The filter I run my parenting through is that I've had my one in a million.
Yeah.
So, but I think now Griffin helped that.
Yeah.
I backed off. And I'm not running around chasing my kid's going to, he's bloodied himself.
Yes.
Griffin especially.
Oh.
I think Griffin has helped me a lot because Griffin has slammed into tables. He's had the egg on his head. You know what I mean? He's had the bloody lip and it's like, okay, he survived. And Brady too. So I am lightening up, but it's taken me longer than I would say you probably at 6 months, Jacob took a header and you were like, cool with it.
Uh-huh.
At 6 months, I was probably like,
literally.
Oh my God, do we have to go get a CAT scan? What
literally.
Do we need to do? What, a little bit of that guy. And I'm worse than my wife because I'm like, do we have to go to the pediatrician? She's like, it's a fever, dude. Let's give him a cool bath. Give him some Advil. Let's see what it's like.
It's so funny that your wife is the exact opposite of you in that sense, too. Like, that's so crazy because I would think it would be the Natalie is who I have to fight. Like, if he's running a fever or something, it's hard for me because my instinct is that when people panic and think that they need to go to a hospital because my parents both worked in hospitals, I'm like, yeah, you don't have to do it. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. He's going to go. It's more hard on the kid to sit in the emergency room for 6 hours waiting to be seen by a doctor than it is just to sit here at home and have cold things put on him. You
and
know what I mean?
I have to say our pediatrician has been wonderful.
Oh.
We have a
who's your pediatrician? Can we ask?
Yeah, I think. I don't think even. Dr. Scott Cohen down in Beverly Hills.
In
Los Angeles.
Yeah,
we
kept
him. I live in Santa Clarita. If
crap.
But it's worth the drive in because both he and he had an old mentor that we kind of went, but that retired. And he broke off and we're like, we're going with him. He's young. He's going to be with us for the long haul. And the philosophy, he's just, you hear his voice.
And
he's just that guy. It's like, okay, I understand what we're fine until we hit this point. And he's not that dude that's annoyed when you call him on call.
Yeah.
And we don't call him for everything, but there have been a couple of times where it's like, look, dude, it's 105. We've given him the bath. What do we need
to do? What's next?
Calm down. We'll talk in the morning. It's exactly what you said. It's better for him to be on Advil for the night if you can make it through the night than to go sit in an emergency room.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of stuff. And, I guess I'm a little bit of I'm certainly not The Rock. Sometimes. I'm getting better at it.
By The Rock, you're not also talking about Dwayne Johnson.
No,
you're talking about the pillar that we were talking about earlier.
I'm clearly not The Rock, if anyone ever has seen a picture.
Yeah.
But I'm not Dwayne Johnson. But again, my wife is the business assassin, the stay calm, the be nice until it's not time to
be
nice.
Yeah.
You can tell.
I've just met her today. And she's a woman of action.
She's the woman when returning something or dealing with like a waiter. And as a former waiter, we cut a lot of slack.
Yeah.
But she's like, we're going to be nice until it's time to not be nice. And she applies that to every situation. And it's like, and I try to take the bullet in a retail situation. Yeah. Like, man, we really need to return this. Please, I don't. Just do it. And then Kim will come up behind me. What's going on? What's happening? And I'm like, it was nice knowing you, retail lady person. But you're about to get your face lit on fire. Trust me. My balls are in a minefield in Thailand.
They're safe there.
You're about to get lit up like no other. Do you have your regional manager's phone number? Because she's about to ask for it. And Bed Bath & Beyond is walking into a shitstorm. They don't understand. They just don't. I'm sorry.
I was sitting here while you were dealing with the cable guy. For those of you who don't know, Bill's having an issue where his cable's pixelating, right? And the cable guy comes in, and Bill was being me. Like, I'm like, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, it's like, I get that you're trying to do your job and everything.
Right.
But ultimately, like, the expectation is that I'm paying for cable that should work. Like, that's the ultimate.
I love it. The high definition channels pixelate. That happens.
More. Yeah.
Well, then don't fucking charge me $10 a month for high definition.
Can I count? And if it happens 15 times and I document it, will you knock 30? $30 off my bill, because that's the way it should work. Exactly. You know what I mean? And I remember watching this and watching you go, listen, I'm not trying to be a dick or anything like that. And I was like, in my house, if that was the situation, my wife would be the one. She would come up and she would say, like, no, listen, we're paying for television. Television should be working. That's what we're paying for. If you can't give us television, then get out of my house and I'll find somebody who will.
To be honest, that discussion has happened in this house. I'm sitting there like, dude, run. Honey, it's the kibble. Exactly what you said.
But is it, so then let's talk about this then. Is it the idea of kids introduced into that situation that creates a level of exhaustion? Because I just feel like I know that my fuse has become shorter just because so much of my life is catering to someone else's needs.
I think that's it. Nobody recognizes that it's both. You and I are lucky we get to stay home a lot. Imagine having, and I don't know how single mothers do it.
Oh, no. That's the first thing my wife and I said.
I tip my cap.
If you were
single mothers
parent,
or fathers.
Yeah, single parent.
To have to go to work and give your child to someone else, and then you don't get a break. You deal with the idiot children at your workplace for 8 to 10 hours or work 60 hours a week. And you don't get a break.
Well, what if they're in like a service-oriented industry where their 8-hour, 40-hour week job is taking care of somebody else?
And then you come home and you get no break, and then you have to unravel what possibly the... You know, we don't have any family close either.
Neither do we.
To take a bullet and be like, hey, grandma, watch the kids while we go out to dinner. So it's... and that's the other thing I think that people don't forget. The guys are part of that teamwork and trying to take the bullet. And, you know, we're fortunate because I don't have a traditional, like, have to work 60-hour week. Guys out there hanging there, you know. But so I think that's the main thing is nobody gets the yin and the yang. And like you said earlier, you guys have one where you can. I don't know if you said this before.
No, I didn't say it on the show.
But you have one where you can hand Jacob off.
Yeah,
and say, I need a break.
We did. That's how we made it through that first year. we had shifts.
I think so too.
Yeah,
there's no shift now.
Yeah,
because if you need to go take care of Brady. If you need to walk away from Brady, you have to go deal with Griffin.
Yeah.
You don't want to deal with
And that's
Griffin.
What I was telling you in the break that I told my wife. My wife, for those of you who don't know, my wife wants to have a second kid. I don't. And I say that just being fact of the matter. It's not like I'm going to hate a child, really. But, I mean, my fear is that I get what's going on now. I've reached a level of homeostasis. I don't want to mix it up. I don't want to stir it up. I don't see the point in it. Her whole thing is, well, you need to have a buddy for when we die. That's the reason. That's exactly why she wants to have another kid.
That's my new T-shirt. You need to have a buddy for when I die.
Exactly. Like,
fucking T-shirt, bumper sticker. Who's your death buddy?
Look, all I can think about is that I have a stepbrother and a stepsister, right? They're all fighting, right? They don't fight with me, but they're fighting each other. My dad has two brothers. They never talk to each other. I grew up as kind of an only child, you know what I mean? I get the appeal of having a sibling because as an only child starting out, I wanted to have somebody else to play with so much. But eventually you get old enough to where you meet friends at school, and then you hit that age of like 10 or 12 where it's like, I hate my little brother or sister, in my opinion. I don't know. Not that I'm saying this is going to happen with your kids,
but
you know what I mean? Where it's like
possible.
You're so annoying and I don't want you around because I'm cool now. You know what I mean?
I have two, my sister-in-law. So I have two nieces and two nephews, 20, 18, 17, and 10. Wonderful kids. But my point being, they're teenagers. They're not going to get along in the same house. And my boys, we sit here going, wow, they have it. Look, my guys are 2 years apart.
Yeah.
15 and 13. They're going to be throwing each other off the roof.
I think you're at 13, like when Brady hits 13, that's where it's going to be rough. Like when there is a time frame when I remember a year is significant as far as socially. Like what I'm doing now is I'm not into playing with Power Rangers anymore. You know what I mean? I'm moving on to riding a bike.
It's going to be eighth grade, or it's going to be that year he goes off to high school.
Yeah.
Now he's around the big kids.
Exactly.
And and Griffin's 2 years.
And the only shot that Griffin has is if he's willing to make the jump and ditch the Power Rangers and just do whatever cool older brother's doing.
Sure.
You know what
sure.
I mean? Like, that's the only way he could keep up. But getting back to what my point was, too, is that my wife, that's why she wants to have another kid. And then my point is that right now we could trade off. Like, so it's like the first year I had the night shift because Natalie... weirdly enough, or the morning shift. Natalie doesn't like getting up in the morning. So she would wake up with Jacob, feed him, and then I would take over and she could go back to sleep. And it worked perfect, right?
Right.
And so now as he's getting older, though, I feel like when I go away on the road and she's home by herself, she's okay. right? Even on a roughest of rough days, she could still live without somebody dying in the house.
Right.
If we have another one to that mix, then they outnumber her when I leave, and then they have the same numbers as we do when I'm home. That's a lose-lose situation.
Well, yeah. I think that needs to be a warning. You know, we talk about what people get informed about.
Yeah.
You need to realize these people who have 3 and 4 kids and are miserable.
Yeah.
And they look around and why?
Yeah.
Look.
Yeah.
Your kids are beautiful. I'm sure they're wonderful children.
Yes.
But you practically fucked yourself.
Yeah.
You don't have the arms, legs, and time
to manage
and keep your own sanity.
And here's my thing. If it happens by accident, I get it because maybe, but I just feel like my life, I'm only talking about my life here and that I have complete control over the situation. I don't have any kind of religious hang up that says birth control is bad. I don't have any kind of feeling where it's like, I don't have any desire to have a big family. I feel like I could dump all of the love I have on this one kid. He could just swallow it whole and maybe grow up with a whole psyche and be completely content and happy with himself. And then the only drawback that is that maybe he's not the best sharer in the world. Maybe that's the drawback that I get for being an only child, but I don't care. Like, I just feel like...
Hey, to each his own for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm telling you, when you've sat and your 2-year-old has run by and you've gotten a little whiff that there might be a diaper.
Yeah.
And you kind of just wait to see if your wife catches it, and so you're so tired, you just your little crap filled diaper fly by, and not just any crap filled diaper. It smells like he had, you know, like he was up till 2 and had a burrito and a 6-pack of High Life.
Like he had a night of Jaeger.
Yeah,
like, and it's just,
and it just
tequila.
Goes by, and you get the waft. You know you got the waft, and as a responsible father, you need to go get, you know, you need to go attack that wet, shitty diaper with undigested raisins in it. But you as a parent choose to see if your wife gets it first. That's exhaustion, my friend. That's the corner where you know you've turned a corner.
Yeah.
In your life, that you're like, God, he seems happy.
Yeah, it's okay.
Let's just let it hang in there for a while.
I mean, we have all the cream in the world. You apply it 4 hours later, it dries up.
Desitin, he's fine. We'll give him a bath. If he circles the kitchen one more time and she doesn't catch it, fine, I'll dive on the shit grenade. But right now, I am tired.
I just want to sit.
I just want to see the Bears-Packers highlights.
Oh. That's Jacob's new thing, is that while we're watching TV, now that he's kind of talking and making noises, like he's going. Do you need to get that?
I don't know. Only to stop it from ringing.
Okay. Wait.
Oh,
Kim's all over it. Look at that. Super mom to the rescue.
Hello.
Single-handedly saving the show.
Or telling AT&T to go F themselves.
Probably that.
It's a potluck.
Probably that. But anyway, is that... What was I going to say? Oh, this idea of, you know, because we changed the diaper like boom, 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 boom. Because my father had a philosophy that if a kid had reoccurring or constant diaper rash or whatever, that he said usually that's a sign of a disconnected parent. That it's like my mom's family, my real mom's family, their family was of the belief that children are a nuisance. Like you had them because you had to have them because that's what you do in life, but they're just a royal pain in the ass. Everything they do.
There's a new t-shirt. I think, you know, go ahead.
No, you can go.
Another t-shirt. Children are a nuisance.
That's what they are. Like, yeah. That's their philosophy. Yeah. One of my cousins, evidently from what my dad was telling me, that he wouldn't cry as a baby. Because it was no good. Like, it did him literally, he'd put him in a playpen, and he would just have poo galore in him, and he would just sit there, and he just had to learn to deal with it, because there was nothing, no, he could cry all he wanted, wasn't going to change anything.
I feel like I have to throw in a positive comment here, because we kind of ranted a little bit about, like, the hardness of it.
Well, it might be an effect of our mood right now.
Sure, sure. Which is, it's great. I also have to say this just for myself, and I know you have these moments. Brady was laying on a blow-up air mattress. 10-year-old cousins are here. As we had family in over the holidays, and he looks up at me and he said, "Dad, this is the best Christmas ever." I want to just point out a positive moment where those moments.
No, that's good. We're almost towards the end. We can wrap up on those.
They melted away. But yeah. I envision this podcast of. There's a practicality of this that's not all puppies and rainbows.
Yes.
And us as the dads, A, we have a big role in it.
Yeah.
Give us some props.
Yeah.
We'll take the bullet. We'll work with you ladies.
Yes.
The other thing is, you know, we may not be perfect because I know you and I as comedic types I feel like my wife has three children.
Yes, she does.
I'll admit, I'm a big baby.
Yes, she
does. I'm a big kid. But I'm also,
I've been in your house for about an hour now, and she does have three children.
But I'm also a big kid who will take some of the bullets some
of
the time.
Yes, you're a big kid grown up.
She's awesome.
You're like Tom Hanks in Big when he became Tom Hanks. Like, you're still a kid at heart, but you had a job.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
You're pulling in the Benjamins.
I do something.
Yeah.
We have value as men. We're part of the team in this generation. We're not our fathers. That's maybe the point.
So what you're saying is that you want the dads to be appreciated more, is what you're saying.
Well, not even that we're appreciated. I just want to recognize that I think this era, and I know more stay-at-home dads,
uh-huh,
you know, who participate than I think in previous generations.
Yeah.
I think we're in on it. You know, that's all.
Well, it's like you watch that show Mad Men. Are you a fan at all of Mad Men on AMC?
Dude, I can't. Look, we have two kids.
Yeah, you're right.
You get to.
I was like, you get
to touch base with the DVR.
Yeah.
That's another thing for parents out there who maybe are thinking about having one or two.
Yeah.
I don't watch hip TV anymore, man.
What?
We don't.
Oh, because they're older, though, huh? Because I can still watch whatever I want. Jacob doesn't care.
They're up later, but yeah, now Brady will write. We can't exactly throw on CSI and sit with Brady. I mean, the end of my evening is Wheel of Fortune and a Food Network cake challenge that's benign. Like, look, they're making beautiful cakes.
Now,
I'm serious.
Well, you've talked about, because now I'm going to go back, but you've talked about being a little bit of a bubble wrap dad. Is that, are you of the mindset that if he watched CSI that it would affect him, or does it? Because I'm saying this not because I have an opinion. I mean, I do have an opinion, but out of ignorance, because I haven't hit that point yet.
Yes, I think it would affect him.
It would affect, because like, you start to deal with nightmares and stuff.
Well, not nightmares, but he's watched, like, look at the stuff we'll let him watch, uh-huh, XR and G-Force and stuff, and he'll repeat it. He'll parrot it.
Yeah.
He'll act it out in his world. So he'll take the little characters we've bought or whatever, all the crap in the playroom, and he'll play with it, and he'll say stuff from a movie where we'll both look at each other like, what?
Yeah.
And he's very perceptive and see stuff that we have to go, like, where did you, oh, wow.
That to him, it's, so you're saying to him it's more of a big deal than it is to you. Like, just to see somebody with a bullet wound to the head could affect him more than is that what I'm getting at?
Yeah, because he would be perceptive enough to be like, take that in.
Where you just think, oh, this is part of the Beast storyline, and you're just like, it just happened. Like, this is just the setup to get into the investigation, which is the meat and potatoes of CSI.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So,
right. Like, some of them, like, you know, Kim will get up and watch the West Wing reruns in the morning, and that's dramatic. We'll let him watch that, I guess, or I wouldn't be too worried about him sitting and watching that stuff. But he's going to see it eventually. I'm not that much of a prude.
Yeah.
I just don't think he needs to see it at four and a half.
Yeah.
And now even, you know, Griffin's 2.5, and he's starting to parrot some stuff. So I would just rather err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
Some parents will not. Now, look, I've let him. Incredibles opens with machine gun fire.
Yeah,
car
yeah,
being
yeah,
chased.
Yeah.
He's seen that. Nemo, for God's sakes, opens with the barracuda eating the mom. Fast forward past some of that shit. And then, you know, you got Night at the Museum. There's something in there that flips the shit out of him.
Well, it's funny to me because...
So I fast forward around. This is my life.
Yeah.
You asked, back to the point. Bill, do you watch Mad Men?
No.
No, but I've seen Night at the Museum 700 fucking times. And not only that, I know what parts to fast forward around. Like, we can hear a gust of wind, and we look at each other like, get the remote.
Get the remote.
The scary part's coming. You know what I mean?
And what do the kids do when you fast forward? They just don't care. This is part of the movie to them?
No, it is. Well, now Brady will call it out. Mommy.
It's coming.
Forward. It's coming. Yeah. Scary part.
Really?
In the other room.
Now,
mommy,
here's
the scary part. And we
this is ignorant
forward.
Parent. This is what I've decided is going to be our role. You're the educated. You're the wiser parent.
Okay.
I'm the ignorant. Well, no, I
we
think it also.
We can operate that way, but it won't work.
I think so, because I feel like it kind of fits with our motif, too. You know, your kids are older. You're older than I am. You've been around the block. You have almost the exact same situation that I have, your high school sweetheart and all that stuff.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So to me, like, I remember holding Jacob in my arms watching all the last three seasons of Nip Tuck. And there was a moment when he could sit up on his own that I was like, is this? I mean, he can't understand what's going on, but is there some level, like, I just don't want it to be like, you know how when they make those movies where they make serial killers or supreme soldiers by holding their eyes open and then showing them all these violent things, you know what I mean? I'm like, what if I'm creating a serial killer by watching him watch people get cut open on a fake television show? You
I don't
know what I
mean? Think you're creating a serial killer by doing that, but I think by him sitting up and seeing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying he's processing it at 18 months or whatever.
I don't think he's processing it.
But I think you might have to be maybe a little more. It's a parenting choice. You might have to be a little more aware of what you're watching.
Because I feel like as ignorant dad, like I feel like if I could get him desensitized to it in a situation where it's not. Because this is where this is all coming from. Kim can weigh in on this too if she wants. Is that when I was 5 years old, probably closer to seven actually, my sister had her 21st birthday party. And my dad thought it would be funny with all these like 20-something-year-old kids walking around the house to put on one of his porno movies in the living room television to see how it would, like, what it would do to the other people around there, what, you know, whatever. So he's being the host, you know, and all this stuff and taking care of the kids. And then he comes back into the living room, and who is nestled up with a blanket in front of the television show and literally a bowl of popcorn? But his seven-year-old son, which is me. And I remember this scene. And so he said he played it super cool, didn't like go, oh, like freak out and turn it off, because he figured if I freak out, then that's going to make him freak out. He seems to be just watching it like he's watching Star Wars.
Sure.
So he says, well, what are you doing? What are you watching? I said, ah, some movie. It's not very good, though.
And he goes, well, see, we don't freak out about it.
Yeah.
So we're very calm about it.
Well, I'm not saying you are. This is my story that I guess because I watched this porno when I was five and I saw like graphic sex acts that I can remember in my head. But I don't like also, I mean, granted, I've been to a therapist. So, I mean, it's not like I came out crystal clear. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But like, I don't think I have any issues, you know, with sex or anything like that. I don't have a weird, like, I feel like I have a disconnect there. So, and I'm not saying that my way is right and your way is wrong. I'm just throwing it out there for food for thought. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, well, it's, again.
Because I do. Saying it out loud, I'm like, this is an ignorant approach to parenting. This is a way stupid approach because everybody in there, there's a reason why we have a rating system. You know what I mean? But I can't get past it to where in my head, I'm like, he could watch Nip Tuck right now. I wouldn't care. And last night he watched, what was it, Good Luck Chuck with like a montage of sex scenes or whatever.
Well, then maybe he'll be well-versed in the ways of the world.
The Kama Sutra?
Yeah. So he'll be in touch with his chief. Hold on 1 second.
Sorry.
You can go get Brady and I'll open the door.
Oh, we can wrap up. We're good. Do you need to, we could totally wrap up. We're at an hour.
Well, yeah, we might have to.
All right,
see,
let's
this
do
is,
it.
This is a fitting end to a parenting podcast.
Yeah, somebody's got to get picked
somebody's
up from preschool.
Picked up from preschool.
There's a mom with a purse and sunglasses, locked and loaded, ready to fly off.
The 2.5-year-old could be jumping off the bureau in the playroom.
He's not. He's watching Buzz? Oh, you got to fast forward at some point. I'm sure there's some toy that's being...
And that's freaking Pixar's Buzz Lightyear. I don't know what's scary in there. All right. I'll go... Okay, and that's Pirate's Booty. It's a snack. He's not eating his own ass.
Come on.
He's not. He's
Come
not
on.
That flexible.
Well, we know that since he can't watch Disney's Pixar's Buzz Lightyear or whatever without fast forward, he's not eating ass. We're covered. We're covered, Bill. All right, thanks for listening. There's more of these to come. I hope you guys enjoy it. You could send us an email, podcast@justincomedy.com, until we get more stuff set up and let us know what you think. Please let us know what you think.
Please.
Yeah, thank you. On behalf of Bill Glass and myself, Justin Worsham, stay frosty.